Ching, ching, bling, bling. Let's cut the chatter. In today's episode, we have a woman of wisdom, WTF. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life, from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others, and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. Welcome to Monday. It's another Monday. Time to talk on Monday. And it's time to feel good. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We made it to another week, people. And yes, we have another shout out this week. Betty Ann from Mississauga keeps our shout out streak alive by guessing great balls of fire. There's something for young people on Snapchat, and it's called Snap Streaks. Well, we have SO Streaks here on Tucci Talks, and our streak is currently at 2. So let's keep this streak alive. What is this week's crazy karaoke? Email me, david@tuccitalks75.com, or get in touch on social media at tuccitalks75. We have come to our final episode of October, ending Women's History Month, with a discussion on philosophy. Before we can do that, we have to take a look back. What did I learn from having Nishita on the podcast last week? Well, Nishita realized that she had a gift. It was the gift of faith, for her heart to recognize this presence within her to help bring purpose. However, to the atheists and to some degree the agnostics, you too have the gift. It's in another form. The gift to make someone laugh. The gift to care for your loved ones. The gift to forgive your best friend. I too have a gift. The gift of truly understanding that I have no clue what I'm doing most of the time. But, I'm willing to ask questions. The questions that bring introspection. It's not so much about searching for answers. Search for the questions you can ask yourself. That brings instant self-reflection, thinking. Challenge your own faith, your own ideologies. Why wouldn't we seek out critical thinking? I will tell you this, I sought out some critical thinking. And wouldn't you have it? My next guest preaches critical thinking constantly. She studied philosophy as an undergraduate at the University of Toronto and attended Teachers College at Althaus in London, Ontario. She has taught English, religion, and philosophy, which has helped her acuity in the realm of critical thinking. She models this type of thinking very closely for her 9-year-old son, who is shaping up to be a critical thinker in his own right. She has parlayed her love of philosophy into a leadership position with the Ontario Philosophy Teachers Association. It is my pleasure to welcome Tamara Ray to Tucci Talks. So thanks for joining me. How are you feeling?
Incredibly nervous.
Why?
Because my stupid comments will be memorialized on your podcast forever.
Well, I got to say, I'm excited to be ending Women's History Month with a discussion on philosophy. I'm not sure if you know this, but my mother's Greek, and philosophy comes from the Greek word philosophia, and that means love of wisdom, What does that even mean? Like, don't we all have a love of wisdom? And what makes the study of philosophy so special?
Well, first of all, yes, the study of philosophy is incredibly special. I always teach my kids that all subjects were once philosophy. So that's why so many old mathematicians or scientists are also considered philosophers in history. And yes, I do think
theologians too, I'm guessing.
Yeah, theologians. That's theology is like philosophy of religion in many ways. They overlap. And I do think people have a propensity for critical thinking and pursuing this love of wisdom. And that's why little kids are always asking questions. But unfortunately, I think quite early on, we lose that love for discovering things just because it's more convenient if we sit quietly in class. Or
what do you mean early on? We lose it.
Like in childhood, we're often encouraged to just behave. Like a quiet kid is a well-behaved kid.
Gets praised
for being quiet. And the kid that's asking too many questions is super annoying. So, yeah, love of wisdom is inherent, I think, to humanity.
Okay, hold on a sec, though. How do we, you know what, I kind of agree with you with, like, we praise kids that just sit there and behave and, oh, they're precious. So what do we do with those rambunctious kids that are just wanting to discover, like you talk about the thinking and the discovery? How do we nurture that, especially in schools? And just so the listeners know, you're a teacher as well. That's how we know one another. We're colleagues. So how do we do that?
Well, it's tough. I think it does take a lot of patience. But my big thing is encouraging critical thinking is one of the ways. So if you look at the Ontario curriculum, for any subject, there's a thinking and inquiry component. And that is ultimately where we infuse philosophy into all our subjects. Sometimes we actually are only assessing knowledge and calling it thinking because we don't know how to really do the hard work or don't want to do the hard work of encouraging those kind of independent exercises in thought, but that we just have to focus more on it. And that's the only way we can do that.
Okay, so I'm going to get to the title of this episode, and it is called Woman of Wisdom, WTF. So the WTF came, from a conversation that you had with a particular colleague that I witnessed. And this colleague so eloquently stated during your conversation that you had quite the, quote, potty mouth, unquote. I don't really want to be a pot stirrer, however.
But you are one.
if you don't stir the pot when you're making tomato sauce while the sauce is boiling, it starts to stick to the bottom. So now having said that, I'm just wondering, isn't that type of colorful language kind of contrary to being a philosopher, like a thinker, if you will? Doesn't it take away from the wisdom piece?
Why would it take away from the wisdom piece?
Because if you're using, let's say, like I called it, colorful language, you're not able to come up with perhaps more appropriate language, especially in certain set.
That's just ridiculous. The use of profanity is in no way linked to low intellect or inability to convey meanings or thoughts or anything well. So it's funny.
Okay. Well, would it, okay, can you, so would somebody be taken, less serious? If I'm in a meeting and I use profanity, for example.
Yes. Probably, because people are dumb. So they might make the error of connecting somehow use of profanity with low intellect or incompetence. But if anything, that would be the person making that judgment's flaw and error and evidence of their own inability to think clearly and logically.
Well, all right, let's pivot. So
I
like
this is a comedy show.
So like I said, we're colleagues. And by the way, to let the listeners know, I wasn't the one that called you a potty mouth, because to me it doesn't matter. So, but I learned about your affinity for philosophy at what we have in our staff room was a coffee club. We used to have like roundtable discussions with other colleagues, and that was back before COVID, and it was a good tradition. Hopefully it could come back. But you spoke about logic a lot. Is logic a branch of philosophy?
So logic is definitely a very important component of philosophy. I don't think I'd call it a branch, and the reason is it has to be present in all areas of philosophy. So it's a fundamental of philosophy.
So have you taught logic?
Oh God, yes. Logic is my favorite unit to teach. I start every philosophy course with logic. And it's just incredible because it really is the basis of critical thinking.
Okay. So then for me, for example, if I was in your class, what are some activities you would do to challenge thinking? Like, are there any games that come to mind? So yeah. Listeners, I want listeners kind of to apply some of these skills in daily decisions. And hopefully maybe we can use some of these thinking skills to enhance our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some simple ways to improve our logic. And there's all sorts of apps now that are geared towards doing this. Just little logic puzzles, for example. If you Google logic puzzles, I often use things that you might find there for introductions for my logic lessons. But when I actually delve into the lessons themselves, it's definitely more specific. So I go into argumentation, the structure of a valid or invalid argument, as well as possible fallacies of content that can be made. Okay,
that like you're going way over my head. So like, what are you talking about?
I'm just saying like, if you're trying to make a point,
yeah.
There's a proper structure that you can follow that ensures your point makes sense.
And
minimizes the chance that it can be argued against.
Okay. So what would the game, so basically you use apps to introduce to your, just to get it started?
Yeah. So I use logic puzzles. So if you just Google logic puzzles, there's a host of options out there to choose from. I also use videos. For example, there's a good one that relates to what you're talking about from Crash Course Philosophy, which is a wonderful resource for teaching short videos. And it's called reasoning. So that's another example of a way I can draw my students, can draw your audience members in.
It's called Crash Course Philosophy.
Yeah, wonderful resource for teachers. They also have Crash Course fill in the blank with another subject area.
Right. Okay, so you know, I want to ask you, how did you become interested in philosophy? Was it how you were raised? Maybe you could give the listeners a little bit of a background.
That's a good question. I think there's definitely some inherent curiosity in me that was cultivated by my dad. He loves arguing, debating. So I did grow up with a lot of comfort doing that. My mom didn't love it as much. So I also got some pinches for certain things I said at the wrong times, maybe in prayer groups and stuff. So it was mixed upbringing in that sense. But when I was in high school, for some reason, I can't remember why, I did take philosophy. And I took philosophy actually at the school I'm teaching at now. My teacher is Bruno Pasquantonio, and he's a lecturer. So I wasn't always in class because of the nature of his lectures. But there's one lesson in particular that inspired me. He inspired me to take first year philosophy, and that was the end of it. I switched into a specialist, and that was, so this is the lesson. I remember distinctly, he went into his back pocket and pulled out this really fat wallet, and he just like, you know, put his hand out in front of him, perpendicular to his body, and dropped it. It was a loud, sort of dull thud. And we all woke up because we had been dozing off probably prior to that. And we woke up and he said, "You're walking down the street and you see this in front of you. You didn't see who dropped it. And you just see this wall up there on the sidewalk. You know, what do you do?" And that just started a wonderful exercise in doing philosophy.
That isn't that like more moral, like theology?
Yes. Well, ethics is a very popular division of philosophy.
So then did you pursue philosophy in university?
I did. So that experience and that course encouraged me to take first year philosophy. At that time, I did not plan to pursue a specialist or a major. But after taking first year philosophy,
UTM. Sorry.
Yeah, UTM. I was just blown away. I loved it. I fell in love with philosophy. It was called Arundel College at that time, and I couldn't get enough. I took every single course that school had, and then they didn't have enough, so I had to go downtown my last year, year and a half, and I just kept going and loved it.
So what was it like pursuing a specialist in, I don't know, it just, that philosophy seems so abstract to me, and I'm sure to a lot of listeners. And so what was that like? What was that experience like?
It was definitely liberating. And I think that's why subjects like philosophy are considered part of the liberal arts, like to be able to be comfortable enough in life to have the luxury, essentially, to be able to free my mind by thinking in these non-conforming ways.
When you say free my mind, I'm just thinking, I'm thinking Morpheus in The Matrix. Do you remember that scene where Neo is, he's like, I'm going to jump. And he's like, yeah, free your mind. You can make the jump. Just free your mind. And yeah, well, he ends up obviously jumping and falling because nobody makes the jump the first time. I was just thinking about when you're saying liberating, that's what I'm thinking about. Well, that's just jumping and freeing yourself.
That's a perfect connection for philosophy. And that's something The Matrix and Truman Show and other similarly themed movies, they all just go back to Plato's allegory of the cave from the Republic, which is this idea that philosophy is this journey from imprisonment to freedom. And the only way to become free is, as Bob Marley says, you know, you have to do it. You have to free your mind. No one else can do it for you.
That I still remember that movie. Me and my brother went to watch it in the theaters in like 1999, and we were blown away. And then you start learning about all these connections it has, like the allegory of the cave and freeing your mind, like you were mentioning with Bob Marley. So I just want to pivot. And I was doing some research, and I found out that female philosophers it's a rare thing. And I'm just wondering, why is it so rare to have women philosophers?
It probably just comes from a history of patriarchy, I would imagine. I mean, I think back to ancient Greeks and seemed to be this notion that, yeah, you could have a female philosopher, but that's just like, whoa, super rare because she was accidentally born with the soul of a man. So that gave her the capacity to do philosophy. And she's still with us a little bit today. I think a lot of that prejudice. But then I look at someone like New Zealand's Prime Minister, Jacinta Ardern, I think her name is.
Okay.
She just recently reelected, but during her term, she gave birth and was able to do like, oh God, to strip people from all their sexist notions is hard, but clearly we're making some progress.
But slow progress. Yeah, I had a guest
any
on.
Any sustainable progress is going to be slow.
I had a guest on last week, and we talked about the church, the Catholic Church, and she was mentioning the same thing, that change, obviously it's a different topic, but it's very slow. They're very slow to change, and it seems like it's permeating throughout all of society with change. Like you talk about this patriarchal society. And this is what I want to get into next, because I don't have the citing for it, but I was reading, because this person who wrote the article didn't, she wanted to be anonymous, but I was reading an article from a female philosophy professor. And so bear with me. She claimed that while she was just out of graduate school, she landed a tenure track job. And during this time, she was with a male junior professor. And long story short, he'd taken her work and published it as his own. And these were her words. She said, back then, and then even more so than now, if a philosopher was bothered citing a contemporary's paper, the author would usually be a man. And this was so regardless of how many women had already said the same thing before them. And I'm thinking to myself, it's like, you know, here's a WTF moment. Like, come on. Do you think this still happens today?
Of course it does. I mean, I'm sure many or at least some of your female listeners can think right now to a time maybe in the last year or two where they felt completely invisible and unheard in a room full of men, possibly of a particular race of men, that just, you know, the power exudes and some of it's internalized sexism, right? Like we think I have nothing good to say, like even not wanting to come on this podcast, I'm like, who gives a who cares what I am, you know, have to say? Why would anyone even care? So some of it is us thinking, oh, well, that's okay. People will pay more attention if it comes from a man. So let me be the second author on this paper because it'll get more exposure. If the male is the first author.
Yeah, I think it's great though that we're ending Women's History Month and we're talking about women and their accomplishments. So I know you have a son, but what about all those mothers and fathers with daughters? You know, think about it. If your daughter contributed greatly and some other male took the credit, how do we mitigate this stuff? And I know you're going to say, well, perhaps you're going to say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it takes time. But there's got to be things we can do now.
Yeah. So just having a son and raising him to be the kind of man that wouldn't even cross his mind. I think I've done a pretty good job about that. Like, he does not have a sexist bone in his body. And he's always confused by sexist stereotypes. He's like, I don't get it. Why do people think pink is a girl's color? Like, he's just,
right.
And it's not that I'm hiding the education component from him. I'm explaining it to him, but because I'm encouraging him to think. And if we can all do this with our children and as a teacher with our students, we're moving in the right direction, and it's might be more rapid than you think. I got one of the projects that I was hoping to that would take off as being a teacher librarian. I have more time to do this stuff. Is something called Philosophy in the Schools. So it goes from just teaching the philosophy course to specific students in grade 11 and 12 to letting it permeate slowly through 9, 10, and even lower into elementary schools. That kind of thinking that keeps sexism at bay where it belongs.
So it's, again, it's like anything, practice and work and continued and sustained work. Mm-hmm. The perseverance part. I want to end on this lady's article by what she said. She said this, but honestly, I don't think philosophy is ready for its own hashtag feminist or anti-elite movement. Philosophers are all talk and no show, myself included. We talk and talk and talk about all the injustices we face, and then we continue doing as we have always done. So I was thinking to myself when I'm reading that, I said, aren't we the same as teachers? We talk and talk and talk about all these injustices, yet we do nothing about it, because it seems like education remains the same as well. These massive institutions.
Well, she and you are just describing, like, she's just talking philosophers, you're talking teachers, but you're just describing humans, right? Like, it's so much easier to just talk than do. But one thing I love about philosophy, it does have an applied component, right? Like, there's always an applied component. So you can have applied ethics instead of just talking and talking about injustices and ethical theories and approaches and all that. You can actually apply it. I don't know if you've seen this show. It's called The Good Place. It's a wonderful entrance into ethics. And some of the discussion revolves around the application, right? And how ethics is not just theoretical, metaphysical structure, or whatever. It's actually something we can apply. So I can relate to your and the philosopher you mentioned, your thoughts. But it's just, there's so much thinking that goes into something before you actually act on it. So it's just a choice we have to make to try to act in small ways. Like I said, with the philosophy in the schools.
I haven't watched The Good Place, but my older brother has, and he loves it. He loves that show. Is it something you'd recommend?
Oh my God, I love it. Yes. So if you're looking for a light entry into philosophy through pop culture references and stuff like that, it's a good one. And there actually is an ethics professor character on the show. So you get both, like, sort of more casual references to philosophical concepts and ethics, as well as very formal ones.
That's awesome. I think maybe if people are into something more casual that they want to tune in, I think that's a good choice. So I'm going to mention now that you are an executive member of OPTA, Ontario Philosophy Teachers Association. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. There's a group of us that do that.
Can you you don't have to delve deep. I mean, just surface stuff. Tell us a little bit about OPTA and how you became involved.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's been a wonderful experience. So I started high school teaching English, very quickly got my philosophy AQ, and when I was taking my philosophy AQ at OISE with Jeff Stickney, he mentioned OPTA. So ever since then, I attended the yearly conferences they have in May. And when I was transferred into the library, out of the classroom into the library at St. Francis Xavier, I found that I had more opportunity for this kind of PD. So after learning from so many philosophy teachers around Ontario for years, I decided to start presenting at the conferences. And after doing that for a few years, Ken Peglar, the president for over 2 decades, invited me to be part of a group of successors, or successors, yeah, to him.
So I'm going to talk now. I met you, well, I've known you for a long time, but I started talking to you more when you went to the library. And I'm just wondering, I know you love teaching philosophy. Do you miss teaching philosophy?
I do. I sometimes beg Mr. Simmons and Mr. Amaral to teach their class. I stopped doing that in the last year or two, but the first couple of years I remember going to them and like pestering them. Can I please just teach one lesson just to get my philosophy fixed? But what I've been doing is I've been supervising a lot of extended, like a lot of extended essays in philosophy, and that's a task that IB students are given during their second year of the IB program. So that also allows me to get a philosophy
I don't
fix.
think listeners know what IB is.
It's just a specialized academic program called International Baccalaureate, and it's offered internationally. So it's kind of cool in that sense. The curriculum is consistent across the world,
Well,
and
that's a that yeah, that's amazing.
it's pretty cool. And I like how there's this independent component of this essay, and they pick their subject, and they pick their supervisor, and they pick their essay topic, and it's always like deep first year type university stuff. So I love it.
So you want to go back in the classroom?
Well, okay, so you mean the actual teaching, right? Do I want to go back? Sometimes. It depends on the day.
No, the reason why I say that is like take someone like me. You've guided a lot of teachers into some of the tools that exist in helping teachers, whether they want to use it or not. And I've been made fun of like I'm some Nearpod advocate now, some teachers around our school.
That's
But
great.
you help many other teachers in aiding them. Wouldn't you miss that?
No, not at all. I don't really feel like I help that many teachers. And I think, like, if you think mathematically, I should be helping way more students if the help that I provide teachers filters down to all the kids in their classes. But I don't think it really works that way. I think
I
you
guess
can
I was
figure out
taking I guess I was taking more of a personal experience and assuming that you're like
helping other
all
people.
these other teachers, which then has the trickle-down effect
Yeah.
where you have like from a flame comes a fire.
Yeah, I think in theory what you're saying is it sounds very impressive, and I think teacher librarians have the capacity to have that kind of impact on a larger number of students. I just don't feel like I'm having that impact. So I think I'd
Maybe I
have a
should we should take a poll.
yeah, maybe. I think what I do for kids in philosophy, and I feel so strongly about philosophy. Like for it to be an elective to me is mind-blowing, and for it to be just like seen as an alternative to grade 12 religion, oh God, it's just so disappointing. Like for me, philosophy should be required for all students, especially in a program like IB. Like it's that fundamental to effective thinking. So in that sense, I miss the classroom. I miss being able to impart this passion I have for philosophy on my students and to give them the gift of logic and proper reasoning.
I want to just hear listening to you talk. I'm just thinking about, again, if I can go back to that movie, The Matrix, and how everybody in The Matrix thought their lives were what they were living, yet they were basically energy sources for the machines. And it seems like now people are just walking around like zombies in this world. And how do we get people to, I don't want to study Socrates. I don't want to study Plato. How do I, someone like me, a lay person, how do we get to the point where we just can think? You know, I always liken it to our minds are trapped. That's why sports are popular. Like we discuss, I know males too. Obviously we could go in different directions, but my circle, they love sports. They talk about sports all the time. Not that we can't talk about other subject matter, but it seems like a common thread is sports, and it takes us away from this whole idea of really thinking critically. And I just don't know what to do moving forward, how to break people out of this matrix that I think we're in.
Yeah. So I think it's quite simple. It really is. You're talking about thinking. It's really just about challenging your thoughts. So that's another way I introduce a philosophy course. I tell the students it's going to be uncomfortable to do philosophy. If you're really doing philosophy, it's not comfortable. It's not comfortable for you. It's not comfortable for the person you're questioning or the people you're having a discussion with. So it's not complicated. It's simple. You just challenge and challenge and challenge your own thoughts and the thoughts of others. And that alone, that activity improves your thinking.
But you're saying that that's simple. Ask anybody to challenge their thoughts constantly.
And, I didn't say it was easy. I didn't say it's easy. It's simple.
Fair enough. So on that theme, last week I had a divinity graduate, Nishita Menon, on, and we had a good discussion on faith and God. It just came to my mind. I'm wondering, can you apply logic? So can logic be applied to religion?
Yes. That's another thing I love teaching other than logic itself, pure logic. I enjoy teaching the philosophy of religion, which definitely incorporates logic. So the type of logic used in metaphysics and the philosophy of religion is inductive logic. So it's a little bit different from some other types of logic that we might use. And so I don't want to go into detail, but it's about probability more so than definite truths or conclusions. But
so
yes,
is Pascal's wager inductive?
Yes, it is inductive. I feel like I'm on the spot.
No.
But the way I teach to keep things simple is everything in metaphysics, where you're talking about whether or not you have freedom, whether or not things around you are real,
right?
Whether or not God exists. These are all discussions we have using inductive logic. And the whole point of inductive logic is that at best, it gives us probable truth. And so we don't have to freak out about it. That's what faith is for. It fills in the gaps. But we can still use and apply logic in these arguments that create for God's existence and other things.
Super cool. I really think that's super cool. So I'm just going to wind down before we get into our Guess What segment. And I know you've listened to some episodes and you understand what we're going to do in terms of the Guess What is a game. But before we do that, I just want to know, what are some of your hopes for philosophy in education in the future?
Yeah, so I alluded to this earlier. My hope is that philosophy becomes mandatory in even just the tiniest little way for students, because I do think that there's a lot of focus on so much that just doesn't matter. And philosophy and critical thinking and being able to analyze an argument instead of just believing everything you see, those are just fundamental to our existence. It's not some academic like study and memorization of stuff Socrates said through Plato or whatever. It matters for our future, being able to think well.
So how do we, well then philosophy teachers are essential. So how do we get there to make something mandatory? Because I can make the argument, I think physical education should be mandatory throughout high school with the sedentary lifestyle that we're living, and even more so now that we're going virtual. So how do we get it mandatory? What are some little small steps? What would be a small step? For me, for phys ed, it would be what I just said right now.
Yeah, so for small step for me is what I mentioned earlier about philosophy in the schools. It's a project that aims to take high school students, high school teachers, and slowly offer bite-sized, age-appropriate content and activities to students. So for example, when we were off on COVID and I had my own curriculum for my son, one of his subjects every day was philosophy. And I found these amazing series of books, or the series called Think About It by Amy Leask. And I love it. And that's something
maybe I could put that on the on my website and give the listeners an opportunity to have a look at that.
Sounds good.
So now it's time for our Guess What segment. Guess
what?
And you're going to be playing. It's going to be light. It's going to be fun. Thank you for joining me today. You did a phenomenal job. I'm very pleased with how things went. And we're going to be doing the Philosophy Feud. Have you ever, do you know what the Family Feud is? Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay. So this is going to be the Philosopher's Feud. You're going to have five questions like the fast money round in the Family Feud. Now I'm going to put 20 seconds on the clock. If you get Tucci Talks 75 points, you will win a Tucci Talks mug. If you get 100 points, that gives you the bonus, and that gives you the option to go back into the classroom teaching philosophy from Simmons and Amaral.
All right, let's do this for 100 points.
So if you get that 100 points, okay? So it's the Philosopher's Family Feud. You can pass if you're stuck, but just, I don't know, say it's not hard. They're not hard questions. It's just like a regular game of Family Feud. I'm going to put 20 seconds on the clock, and we will go for it. Okay, ready? Here we go. Take a breath. And let's go. I'm going to begin after I say the first question. I'll start the time. Okay, here we go. Ready? Are you ready?
No, but okay. I don't have a choice here. Let's go.
Name something children have difficulty learning to use.
I thought these were philosophy questions.
No, it's just regular. Go.
Forks.
Name something that siblings compete over.
TV.
An eye for an eye is one expression that contains the word eye. Name another.
Apple of my eye.
Name something that comes in a spray bottle.
Water for parrots.
Name something that gets filtered.
My language.
Thank you. All right, let's see now. Let's see what...
Certainly language gets filtered from TV shows. Maybe not my language.
So the spray bottle question was a shout out for last week's episode. And by the way, 99% of my friends would have sprayed the parrot back in their early 20s. So I'm not alone. And I just want people to know that. And God always forgives anyway. Let's see. Number one, name something children have difficulty learning to use. You said a fork. What did the survey say? 28 eating utensils. Nice one.
Not bad.
Name something that siblings compete over. You said TV. Is that what you said?
Yeah, like TV time. Yeah.
TV time.
I said TV.
8 points. The number one was parents' affection.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, and number one was toilet. For the name something children have difficulty learning to use was 36, toilet. Parents' affection, 42. Huh. An eye for an eye is one expression that contains the word eye. Name another. You said apple of my eye. That is 18 points. The number one answer was beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Name something that comes in a spray bottle. You said water. That is 5 points. Window cleaner was the number one answer.
But if you had surveyed your listeners, the number they one answer would have said been water.
I know. They would have probably said water. And the last question, name something that's filtered. The number one answer was 49 points. And that was water.
So not language.
Not language. Language was 1 point.
That was my answer.
Yeah. So you fell short.
Oh,
and that's okay. I know you. I'm sorry that I didn't put philosophy questions on there, but this was the philosophy feud. And I appreciate you playing. It's always fun. That's all we're doing this for.
It's really fun. And you know, Ivana, my wonderful library technician, would miss me too much if I left the library. So I'm going to be happy staying there, not getting 100 points and going back to the philosophy classroom. Thank you so much, Tucci. I had so much fun.
Can you, before for our listeners, can you just maybe perhaps give, I always like to ask this, it's not a requirement, but do you have any book recommendations? It's always good for us to help journey others along with reading.
So I'd say for book recommendations, it depends on what your readers are interested in. I'm reading this right now and will be for the rest of the year, The Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday. So it's a nice, if you're looking for a calming philosophy,
right,
a philosophy that helps you with controlling your emotions, but it really depends. So if any of your readers do reach out for specific things they're looking for in philosophy, maybe I can tailor other recommendations to them.
So they, you're saying if they email me and they can ask me and then I'll just pass that along to you?
Sure. Yeah. Like from a teacher perspective, what I'd recommend. Sure.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. You did fabulous. And I'm sure the listeners will look forward to listening to this episode.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate the time. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye. It is truly fantastic that absolutely anything can be improved with steadfast practice. Who would have thought that arguments had a certain framework? Well, we know they do. I'm just saying that we never really, or at least I don't, think about the correct structure to forming my arguments when I'm in a conversation. It was super cool ending Women's History Month with a conversation in philosophy. I did find it troubling when I stumbled over that article involving the female philosopher. It just reminds me how much more work needs to be done. And education really is the key. Thank you to Tamara for sharing her passion for philosophy with you, the listener. So please leave a like if you're enjoying the content, support the podcast, discuss the topics provided with your circle of influence, and let's begin to blow these winds of change. A good start out of the gate would be to understand finances. It is the backbone of how we function in society. It is fundamental. And that is why next week we will be bringing on a gentleman who has over 20 years experience in the financial industry. We will be taking a behind the scenes view on how retail and institutional markets work, what people should be looking out for. Basically, we're going to attempt to figure out how our money works from the central banks down. That is it for me. Don't forget the crazy karaoke from earlier. And wherever you're listening right now, hang in there. And please don't forget to add, that's right, a little funk to your day.